Mr. Alan Pollock, Reel 3. Now, we're talking about when you got to RAF College at Cranwell in September 1953. Now, when you started, what was the sort of routine, daily routine? And we'll pick up all the other things off our daily routine.
Yeah.
I mean, when would your day start? A typical day. I know there's no such thing as a typical day in many ways, but...
Well, there probably was, really. And...
How would it start?
It was certainly round about 6. Or 6:30. And I don't think there was an inspection every day, but every day the huts had to be left in apple pie order, and to a quite phenomenal extent, thinking back in retrospect. Because literally, you'd have a toothbrush that was kept, or one of you would sacrifice a toothbrush to literally clean at the back of the toilet round at the back. So it was absolutely spotless, sort of almost everywhere that you could get at, and almost to a ridiculous stage, and also the dust anywhere and everywhere.
So before you did anything, you'd make sure the room was spotless.
Yes, and it was split so that there'd be, and it was changed just after, I think in the middle of our time in junior entries. It became a slight higher profile political aspect. I think it was, whether it's right to call it phasing, but really the senior of the two entries that were down in junior entries very much were responsible for the standard of the hut, and also the way it worked was that the junior people were licked into shape, and they had to perform in terms of getting everything spotless. But I think while we were there, there was something that reverberated right to the top, because on our entry we had the son of who was just taking over or about to take over as chief of air staff, and there were reverberations about, because I think he had his arm broken, and to us that was quite just a routine thing, you know, on the inter-squadron rivalry that we used to have. And I mean, there'd be floor polish bombs going down into fires, and then you'd have to get everything spick and span again. It was quite amazing what went on.
So I'll come back to that. So you cleaned your room first, and then what would happen next in your typical day?
Well, it was literally off to breakfast, and then there'd be early drill, and then sometimes there'd be punishment drill before that if you were on restrictions.
What about food? What was the food like, General?
Well, I thought the food was quite all right.
What kind of food was it compared to what you were used to?
That's a searching question. All I remember was it was adequate, and it didn't fuss me. But we used to laugh that we only had green jam or red jam, and that's probably my vivid memory that you've probably heard from other people. I mean, they were just two types of jam, and they were just different colours. They didn't seem to taste different.
And was there enough food for a growing lad? And you were just a young lad.
Yeah, I'd say there probably was, yes. I can't remember.
So no complaints about the quality or the quantity of the food.
No.
Now, what about drill? Now, you'd done drill with the CCF. And
yeah, but I mean, it was much more. It really was. The whole ethos at Cranwell was that they would turn you out and insists that you were better than the guards, because the guards would send up for all the competitions that I remember, the drill competitions, there would be guards NCOs up there who would actually, and the RAF regiment people largely involved on the drill side would want it to be up to and beyond guard standard.
Now, that's a long way ahead of CCF standard then. So
oh, yeah.
How did you react to this level of drill, this pernickety?
Well, I think one just accepted it.
Did you enjoy it?
And
some people do.
Well, quite early on, I because of my height, I was picked out to be a there's a special, I'm trying to think what it was called now. I've lost that.
Right,
Mark. And in memory, no. But that was a little later, actually. That was in my third term. Because of my height, I'm trying to think what. There were two people were picked out that normally were the same size and fairly tall to do with the parade aspects that you had some duties and all. I'm afraid it's gone. What that?
Did you see the point of drill at the time?
I think one. I think I accepted it as a sort of necessary evil, and it was such a routine that you basically had to accept it, or you wouldn't stay. I mean, one or two people did dip out quite quickly, and that was probably one of the things maybe they were reacting against. My big memory, actually, on the drill side was when you were on punishment parades, and because I boxed, I was often released, because often you'd be doing early morning training even before the drill, going out for early morning runs to do with the sport. And I can just remember that how beautiful it was on restrictions. When you went back, when your restrictions stopped, you felt you got an incredible amount of time, and yet one was still working a very busy day, because everything was boxed in to having everything immaculate in the morning, and then a very tight schedule all the way through. You wouldn't have any problem going to sleep at night. Because
so what after the drill sessions then? Say drill, you've got morning, breakfast, then drill. What then?
And then it was split up into various aspects. That what was quite an important element was the ground defence training.
Now, what's ground defence training?
And that was linked largely with regiment, rifle, Bren guns, etc.
So it's weapons training.
Weapons training, yeah.
Now, how did you do with this? Because you'd been worried about the fact you weren't a very good shot with the you know. So you're back. I presume Lee ended.
Yes, one of them. And although I ended up getting the prize for survival and that at Cranwell, I don't know quite what was involved with it all, but I think I did well at the survival camp, because largely again
stick to weapons first. So what weapons training did you get in this ground defence thing?
Well, it was standard sort of stripping down. I think both the Bren and the 303 and a variety of other exercises, and also I'm pretty certain we fired revolvers, I think. And
now, what type of exercises would you do to practice your it's infantry skills, isn't it? Ground defence skills.
Yes, I think there was less of that element in terms of actual practice than survival camp. Survival camp was the big thing that you did after your first two terms, from memory.
So in the first two terms, what would you be doing?
I think there was shooting, there was weapons training, and I think there was a minimum amount of about tactical training or tactical exercises. I really can't remember too much about whether we did that, but it was all seemed to be centred round where they did this ground defence training. I'm pretty certain it was called GDT.
Now, other than ground defence training, what else would you do in the early days? You've got drill, ground defence.
Yeah. I think quite early on, and that was my very first flight, that would be in an Anson, and you were already being introduced to the use of your parachute. And I can remember vividly, we had one sad bloke called Jones who very quickly didn't survive at Cranwell. And I can remember he picked up his parachute by his D-ring, you know, the one thing you weren't supposed to do. And it was quite a memorable incident as he was going out to the Anson aircraft.
Now, this is an air familiarization
course. Yes, yeah.
And what do you remember of it? I mean, is it your actual... you've been in gliders.
Mm.
But it's your first powered flight.
Yes.
What do you remember of it? What did you think of it? It's going to be your life, wasn't it? What do you think of it?
I can remember, yeah, what a rackety old thing it was inside and that. But whether that's coloured by my later experience, I don't know. And it was a flight Sergeant Ponsford took me on my first flight, I can remember. And then there was a flight Lieutenant Hennessy, I think. And it was partly to learn side by side with what we were doing on the ground side, in other words, in the college academic program, but the airmanship or air aspects of that running in parallel down at flights. It was really little more than air experience and a navigation training. Almost looking out of the small sort of windows that they had in the Anson, and also the Astrodome and that.
Did you enjoy the flight?
Yes, but yes, I mean it was intriguing. But looking back, it was a bit of an old battle bus, the Anson.
Now, so what else were you doing? You mentioned
but flying off a grass airfield. You see, I'm pretty certain that flew off the ground. Yes, I don't remember that flying from the runway. It was from the grass airfield, which the Anson could do quite well.
Now, what else are you doing? So that's ground defence and weapons training together.
It was split into humanities and sciences, I think it was.
So there was academic courses.
Yes, yeah.
Now, what were they? How far were they on?
Was maths and basic aerodynamics and thermodynamics, and you'd gradually work your way through that syllabus, which kept on going. And one was already doing that academic aspect already in junior entries. You're going off to, I think we called them classes, or I honestly can't remember what it was, but there was a site which is no longer there at Cranwell because it's completely been redeveloped and extended. But there was a kind of hutted camp which we called East Camp. No, sorry. I think it was A site we called it.
And that's where you had your lectures.
Yes, I'd had that in the diary, but that was a kind of wood slatted buildings, a kind of like sort of shiplap type.
So there's mathematics, aerodynamics, anything else lectures on?
Yes, that was sort of all linked with what was called aeroscience. And then also, even early on, one was doing the humanities stream, which would be history, modern history, the world affairs, I think one would call it. Rather linked to, yes, I think world affairs is probably the best. I don't think it was called that.
Any particular history of the RAF? I mean, you know, the formation of the RFC, the formation of the RAF, or the Second World War role, or was that not done?
I think in a strange way it wasn't done in that sense, but there were other lectures and visitors and things that were there almost every term, where people came and spoke, and I think you're right. I don't think we did Royal Air Force history as such then.
Now, what else were you doing?
Quite a lot of sport.
Now, it's where you were doing boxing, was it?
Yeah, but also other things, athletics, and I think they had standards, but I could be wrong about standards because I half think standards came later to encourage people to sample a whole variety of athletics.
Now, what sporting activities did you do then?
I think it was rugby and boxing and athletics, really. And I was never, I always found cricket a bit boring, really.
And you were you keen on sport, or was it just something you did?
No, I was quite keen on sport without being outstanding at rugby, or I think I quite liked it. And you had to go one way or the other. And also, I think a few people did hockey up there. But the marvellous thing at Cranwell was the variety of activities, because I was able to do potholing and canoeing and.
Now they're sort of adventure sports.
Is yes, that part of the I think that was that. It was more that area that I was extremely interested in, and did mountain climbing. I mean,
well, tell me about the adventure sports, because you know.
Chris Bonington was on my course, but he wasn't able to fly. I mean, he wasn't able to. But I used to go climbing with Chris, and he always used to start whistling just before. I knew as soon as he was whistling, that meant he was interested in a problem, and within within 10 or 20 seconds or the next minute, I'd be going up, and I'd be fairly terrified at the exposure, because I remember that in both Snowdonia and Harrison's Rocks, and later in Germany with Chris after he was in the tank corps when he left the RAF.
So you did adventure sports, so you did
and
rock
potholing,
climbing.
Potholing and canoeing and a whole variety of things.
What
and
do you think
sailing.
Of potholing?
Oh, I've thoroughly enjoyed potholing.
Where would you go for that? The peak?
Yes, that's right. I think there were three places we did that. And it was very easy. You had to organise it, but in a way there was a kind of routine and a club or a society or something that made it much more. It wasn't over-subsidised, but the whole thing was fairly straightforward because, of course, other people had done it. And that aspect was extremely good at Cranwell. I mean, and also I was fortunate to go overseas and as well with the Navy and then down into the Mau Mau. When I was just turned 18, down to Kenya.
Was that your second year?
Yes, that's right. So I'd started flying by then.
Right.
So the first 6 months basically is to grind you down, full of discipline, and to.
Any other subjects you're doing? You weren't doing aircraft recognition or signalling then. In the first 6 months.
No, but you'd be already covering the things like the signal square, you know, because the signal square I can remember using, but only for the first.
I don't know what a signal square is, sorry. What?
Well, before you had radios that worked all the time, if you joined an airfield, you'd have to look down, and before you had radios, the best way to think about it, you had to look down. Because there was no way of your knowing anything to do with that airfield. But you could look down and you could look at the signal square, and that could tell you A, where you were, and B, some of the dangers of that particular airfield and some of the way the circuit went, whether it was a left-hand circuit or a right-hand circuit, whether you weren't to go on the runways or whether you were to go on the runways, and the whole variety of visual aspects to the signal square. So that was still quite important when I joined, and yet within a year radios were sufficiently reliable that the signal square was still there by air traffic control, but intriguingly its use really waned, because once you'd got radio all the time there was no need for it.
Now, anything else you were learning in the first 6 months, or any other topics?
Already one was doing aerodynamics from a fairly basic, and then a stream going all the way through to do with aerodynamics and thermodynamics for engine design, and also practical workshops. The other thing we did, which I didn't mention in junior entries, was what workshops, and you
Tell me about them. What are you doing then?
You actually had to make, and I've still got it in the garage. You've probably heard about this, that everyone made a shooting stick out of, and it was really to do with turning and using the lathes and what have you, with some marvelous old boy, probably civilians by then. I think they were civilians instructors, rather, but almost certainly that they'd been ex-NCOs. And down in workshops, it was to teach you really basic, minimal engineering skills. And again, I found I was a bit cack-handed at that. So this did slightly worry me, the fact that I was pretty cack-handed or not very good with a gun. And yet later, you know, I was fortunate to be fairly good at firing.
We'll come to that. Now, what about PT? I should have mentioned that.
Lots of PT. Yeah.
What
I didn't mention. Every term there would be a knocker. It was called the Knocker Cup and the Knocker Competition, which literally would be one squadron. There were three squadrons in my day. There was A, B, and C. And later there was a development and there became a new D squadron. But it was just A, B, and C. And you were streamed separately so that each entry had an A squadron, a B squadron, and a C squadron. And you progressed through the college in your entries. And I was in number 67 entry. And I forget how many we started with, but I think we finished with about 20. And I think we probably lost three or four, but I don't think we had any fatalities, so we were fortunate in that score.
We were doing a PT.
Yeah.
And this knocker cup, what was that?
Yes. Like? And the other thing already, if was to do some being able to swim to sufficient standard, I don't think I've got a problem there. You had to do certain exercises like swimming, and that was linked with partly with survival in terms of exposure. You know, if you went down over the water and dinghy drill, I'm pretty certain or one was already doing dinghy drill and swimming all mixed up even before you'd started flying, which again made sense. So in the swimming baths you'd already start probably with the crew, the big dinghy, and then probably already.
Now, what is dinghy drill?
Well, that was for survival overseas. If you had to ditch your aircraft, and it was that element of basically being able to swim well enough and to operate your dinghies. They develop later, but you'd always be sitting, in an ejection seat later, or even without the ejection seat, you'd be have a dinghy with you in every aircraft.
What were the dinghy drills, though?
It was actually getting the dinghy blown up, which I can remember doing it both for the big dinghies, which were probably almost going out of fashion, so to speak, because they were largely for the larger aircraft that would have those. You know, I think a Wellington and a Lancaster, and that would have the big dinghies. And I can remember we did dinghy drill with those, and also with the smaller ones. But
so essentially, it's blowing it up.
That's right, yeah, getting it getting it up the right way up and being just up to such a standard that on your swimming, but I think almost everyone could do that. There wasn't any great problem.
Now, we ducked away twice.
And then on going back to your PT, you know, one would learn somersaulting and lots of box work.
Box work?
Going up. And over vaulting boxes, I think they call them, of various types. And as I say, there was a competition between the squadrons every term.
Just on.
And that was called the Knocker Cup. Yes, and that was just entirely on PT.
Any sort of physical training in the wider perspective, like assault courses or long marches or runs, cross country running, or was it mainly just gym work?
Yeah, I think the cross country runs I associate more with boxing training very early in the morning and winter Lincolnshire in the dark, and sometimes often with boots. I think we did it.
You think that was more the boxers?
Yes, I think. And also, there was this other thing which I haven't mentioned. I mean, there was the simulated and then the real first term guest nights, which were linked really to having to perform something for the entry above.
Tell me about that.
And that was really linked to sort of pass or fail on some form of entertainment. It was a kind of, again, linked with this phasing or whatever you would call it between one entry and the next. And it was linked with also a mock kind of inspection where the senior entry of the junior entries would get the others out, and literally they'd be in their denims and what have you, and there'd be a sort of simulated parade. But it was all crazy because it was all really to almost humiliate the next entry down, and that was almost a kind of routine thing. And it sounds a bit savage, but in many ways the system was did work in a way.
So because it gave
bonding to the entry, because you had to react in your own interest to keep your cohesion.
So what were the cadet shows like?
Well, I mean, there'd be a whole variety of daft things that would happen on this simulated inspection, because it would, you know, there'd be, you'd quite like to have, I don't know, fire water buckets thrown over you and things like that. And then the first term, that was a sort of thing that was happened late at night, and it was almost for the amusement of the and licking into shape by the senior entry to the junior entry. And then there'd also be this simulated first term guest night that when you went up to the college to. There were two stages to it. One was in the junior entries, where you had to invent some turn or something that was spectacular enough to get you through. And I can remember something I did was just with lighter fluid, because you probably knew you could actually get lighter fluid and you could have a lot big flames and you could actually not burn yourself if you were lucky. And that was, I remember, the one I did for the junior entries. And then up in the college, again, it was a kind of forfeit type thing. But again, it sort of made you think how you'd entertain the rest of the college, who'd be pretty anti the new. Again, it was a sort of rite of passage for this first term guest night, which was later.
Was there any bullying by the older cadets or the younger cadets?
Well, I would say, in a way, licking them into shape. Yeah, you could call it that way, but it wasn't all bad, because in some ways it taught people. Although I have heard some people think of it in a negative way, but I never saw it that way. But I can imagine if you were a slightly more sensitive soul, perhaps it might have affected you. And as I say, that, or as I mentioned, there was this interesting aspect that I heard later, that because of the injury to Tony Boyle, that some of this ended up almost in Parliament, this aspect.